I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
I'm getting out of this jungle dump. I am fed up to here with this treasure hunt business. Yeah. Ira, you miserable worm, you lied to me. You said she was a city girl, out of her element. Just get her in the map and bring them back. Piece of cake. Piece of cake, my butt. What went wrong? I'll tell you what went wrong. First of all, guess who else is here? You're dead right, Solo.
What?
Secondly, she's got herself a partner who likes shooting holes in everything.
The minimum price for taking a stranded woman to a telephone was $400.
$375 in traveler's checks?
Not a deal.
That's just the beginning of what's going on down here. There's nothing you can say that'll make me go back into that hellhole. Don't bring that up, Ira. Ira, stop it! All right, I'll go back. But this time, you're coming with me.
Hello and welcome to Smersh Pod 3, the podcast that relights the fire of 80s action movies and celebrate the decade where the explosion was king. He was king. And as I've pointed out before, explosions are a man.
Why?
Because they blow up. Women don't blow up.
Well, men blow off. They don't blow up, John.
Yeah, but you know, you tend to find that most explosions are caused by men.
Men blowing off.
Up.
Okay, fine. Whatever.
Stop talking about blowing off.
Love blow off. As a term, blow off. It's hard to beat, isn't it?
It's
you've done a
good
blow off. It's just a brilliant thing to say to someone. Sorry. Carry on. Hi.
I'm trying to keep this highbrow by talking about gendering explosions. You're talking about farts. What's going on?
Apologies. Carry on. Do your podcast. Go on. Right.
Well, this week we'll be talking about a mousy romance novelist who sets off to Colombia to ransom her kidnapped sister and soon finds herself in the middle of a dangerous adventure hunting for treasure with a mercenary rogue. Yes, it's Romancing the Stone.
Hooray!
And joining me to try and make it snappy.
I don't get that.
There's crocodiles in it.
Oh, sorry, yes. Yeah.
Sorry, we're just starting a new series. It's a writer, broadcaster and mayor of Tarrant.
Yay!
Via her excellent podcast, Always There, which has just finished its second series.
It has. It's triumphant, the second series. Thank you.
Absolutely,
yes.
Triumphant.
I know,
because
right?
In the end, you had...
I had Jan Howard, a.k.a. Jan Harvey, an actor from the series. Well, the star of the show, basically. And she was phenomenal. In fact, she was sat where you're sitting right now.
Oh, I feel honoured.
Yeah.
And, you know, anyway. Julia Rayside.
Hooray!
Who can be found
me
on Twitter as JN Rayside?
We've both got colds if we sound a bit weak.
Yeah, I'm just getting over one and you're just getting one.
I'm just getting one, yeah. It's lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah, the snots have started, so I'll try not to sniff directly into the microphone. Apologies.
Only cocaine.
What, it sounds like I'm on coke?
No, I just like saying cocaine.
Cocaine.
Like they used to say on telly in Britain in the 80s.
That sounds like how Alan Partridge would say it. Mm. Cocaine.
He was found with 300 kilograms of cocaine.
And drugs paraphernalia.
Yeah. Rolled up newspapers. No, sir, tinfoil.
What? Not rolled up. Wasn't that Skag?
Yeah. Rolled up newspapers would be great if you had a really big nose.
That's
and you wanted
like
to
hitting
snort.
Wasps. I don't understand. We're never going to start. Should we just start?
Snorting wasps. It's awful. Romancing Stone, you requested this one.
I really did, because I remember, I didn't go to cinema loads when I was a kid, but I do remember going to see this with my dad and my brother and just thinking it was one of the best things I'd ever seen. Yeah, just loved it. It was definitely, I mean, there's lots of signifiers that say it's girl film, yeah. Which obviously, you know, in these days of hashtag Me Too, we should be gendering. But definitely it was a film that my brother and my dad could enjoy. But there was definitely the romance in the title was clearly a clue that I would also like it.
I would say that's accurate. I'd say it's a film that satisfies both genders.
I think it does.
Because it starts off with the woman being fairly... weak and feeble,
yes.
And she turns into a strong woman by the end.
She does, exactly.
It's much like the film Medicine Man.
You think this is comparable to Medicine Man?
I think this is much better than Medicine
Man. Oh, no, well, I agree. I mean, completely. It's flawless, practically flawless.
Like a stone.
Yes.
See what you've done.
Are you going to do this for the whole hour?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just so I know. Okay,
but
great.
We open with one of Joan's novels.
Yes.
Illustrated in front of us via a camera.
With a woman in a wet dress.
In a wet dress, you can see a boob.
You can see an actual boob. And actually, again, this is like Airplane. I saw Airplane at school when I was about 8.
Yeah.
They showed it on like a projector in the school hall one wet break or something. I don't know why. It was maybe a special treat. And I watched it again as a grown-up. I didn't realise there were boobs in it.
Mm.
And it was quite shocking because I just thought, well, didn't my parents think it was a bit much for me to go and see a film with boobs in it?
I think...
But it was only like through material for a second.
I think still. In those days you expected boobs.
Really?
Yeah, they're in everything. I mean, when you're a child, when I was a child,
yeah.
When we were children in the 80s, because let's face it, we were.
We bloody well were.
When you're watching a film with your parents, you expect at least one boob or at least one sex scene.
Yeah, something to feel desperately awkward about, yeah. And so there was both in this film, actually.
Yes.
Yeah, so.
Well, there's awkward stuff in this. But so your dad can say, oh, I see I see there's a sale at Smith's.
Yeah, he can rustle the Telegraph or
yeah,
whatever.
Or I'll just go and make us some tea, shall I?
Yeah. Squash, anyone? Anyone? Barley water?
Yeah.
cough. Yeah, lots of sort of crossing of legs.
My mum used to have a tactic of going, oh, rude bits.
Yeah, which is so much worse.
Which is,
I think I've done that to my son and he hates it.
I guess she's thinking, I'll cut the tension.
Yeah.
But no, I'm actually making it much worse.
I'm going to directly focus everyone's attention on the thing we all would rather not be paying any attention to. That is a brilliant deflection. Well done, mums.
Well done, everyone.
Yes.
So she's probably thinking about cowboys, and there's a baddie called Grogan. It's not important.
It doesn't matter.
It's all her novel. But she's got this eponymous hero called Jesse.
Yes.
Of which his face we don't know.
No, but he kind of has a silhouette that's not dissimilar to, sort of a mulleted Michael Douglas. In a cowboy hat. Yeah. You never quite see a face. It's always shadowy, but it's fairly obvious who it's supposed to be.
To tell you an interesting fact that's sort of about Michael Douglas.
Yes.
Michael Keaton's real name is Michael Douglas.
Is it really?
But he had to change it.
Oh.
And Michael Douglas's real name is not Michael Douglas.
What?
I can't remember what it is now, but Kirk Douglas's real name is something Polish.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So bloody Michael Keaton had to change his name for
so
someone
there
who's
is
not
no...
his real name.
That's crazy. There's no Michael Douglas.
There is
As
no
concept,
Michael Douglas.
He doesn't exist.
He doesn't exist. He's Schrodinger's... Michael Douglas.
It's going to be quite hard to discuss this film now, bearing in mind he doesn't exist.
Doesn't exist.
Well, we'll try
He is
and do
faceless
it anyway.
Like Jesse.
He is, literally.
Yeah.
Just some shape in a cowboy hat.
But she finishes her story. Now, I was thinking, wouldn't this really, if you did a British version of this film,
yeah.
A la Who Dares Wins or The Wild Geese,
right.
About Barbara Cartland finishing her 187th novel
and
crying.
Yeah.
Tears streaming down her face. And she has to go on an adventure with, I don't know, Lester Piggott.
Lester Piggott.
Because he rides horses.
Sweet Jesus.
He's glamorous.
I'm thinking maybe more a show jumper or someone with a bit of, you know, suave and
I couldn't
swagger.
Think of any show jumpers.
Now, what's that guy's name? Nicky? No, I've forgotten.
Nicky Lauda? No, he's a
no,
racing
he's
driver.
No, he's a racing driver.
No, yeah. I'm thinking Lester Piggott because he rides horses and he's got loads of money under his mattress.
He allegedly did have a lot of money under his mattress.
He's glamorous.
Yeah. In a Gilly Cooper sense, you mean. Sort of like Riders.
Riders. Yeah.
I think we're thinking Gilly Cooper, not Barbara Cartland. But no, I see where you were going. But
anyway.
Yeah
sorry. Enough of my flights of fancy. Let's go with Joan Wilder.
Do write that up, though. I'd be interested to read it.
Yeah,
no, she writes that she's writing this romantic fiction and her characters are Jessie and Angelina. And Angelina is the woman in the wet dress. There's a lot of women in wet dresses. Mostly it's her. Oh, her characters, they're wet all the time. But yeah, he's kind of like this suave cowboy who comes and saves her at the last minute, even though she's kind of kick-ass herself,
yeah,
and kills the baddie who's trying to steal her money or whatever. She does sort of have this partner in crime. I quite like that because it doesn't open with her being saved by him, but he's kind of around and he helps out, much in the way that, well, as we go on, it's mirrored in real life.
It's almost like it's written that way, isn't it?
Do you think?
Yeah.
Do you think they meant it to echo, like a future echo? Yeah, probably.
It's like poetry.
Yeah. But it's really sweet because obviously the star entrance is the big thing in any Hollywood film.
Yeah.
And Kathleen Turner's is, you just cut to her, like, in headphones, wearing a kind of slightly gawky...
No makeup,
like, really lovely face, and just hair in a ponytail, tears streaming down her face, and a nightshirt, sort of just typing and crying.
And socks.
Yeah, it's a very manic pixie dream girl sort of an entrance.
She was beautiful, wasn't she?
So
I mean, like,
beautiful, yeah.
Her voice as well, everything about her was just stunning.
Yeah, but she kind of changes through the film. So she starts off looking kind of like a girl, but she ends the film a woman.
A woman?
Wouldn't you say? But yeah, she is. She looks so beautiful. And I realised the kind of knee socks, nightshirt thing, that's very much a look I keep coming back to in my own life.
Yeah.
I love
men
that.
Can't do that, of course.
Yeah. No, you look a bit weird.
Like a chicken.
I once went out with someone who once... I came into the bedroom and he was wearing a nightshirt and I just literally snapshot like a bulldog clip.
Was it Groucho Marx?
I wish it had been. It would have been funny and not just freaking disturbing.
Because Groucho Marx did that in Duck Soup, didn't he? When he had to pretend to be looking in the mirror.
Did he?
He was wearing a nightshirt.
No, it wasn't anything even that amusing. It was just sinister.
Is this person in prison now?
I'm pretty sure they are, yeah. Yeah, really? I do hope so, yeah.
Why would you wear a nightshirt as a man?
I don't know.
No.
I don't even want to. Can we not think about it?
No, that's not.
I wish I'd never mentioned it.
No, because we're trying to think about romantic things.
Exactly.
Yeah. So Joan Wilder,
she's adorable.
She's got a sign in her apartment saying that she's the winner of the Writer of the Year award at the Romance Book Club.
Yep.
So she's good.
Yeah, she's very good. She's got bestsellers. There are all over her flat is sort of, or apartment. There's like posters saying that she sold millions of books or this or that, or she's won this or that award. She's clearly, it's a really good setup. They're basically painting her as this hopeless romantic who lives through her books. She's alone. She's got a cat called Romeo.
She's feckless because she's run out of tissues.
Yes, she has.
And she's got a note saying buy tissue, so she uses that to blow her nose.
She does. And actually, I'm sitting here now thinking I feel a bit coldy. And do I have a post-it in my pocket? Because I don't think I've got any tissues. But yeah, no, she's very relatable.
Yeah.
She's clearly beautiful, but they kind of just make her very accessible and sweet and kind of like a bit of a geek, a bit of an idiot. But she's lovely. She's adorable.
She is adorable.
She kind of does like a cat food commercial with her cat.
Yes. Well, she, her one constant in her life, because she's so bloody unable to get a man. She's
no, got a cat. No called, one's good enough for her.
No one's Jessie, you see.
Yeah, exactly.
She's got a cat called Romeo.
Yeah.
And she gives him his cat food with a garnish.
She does, which she has waiting in the fridge, which is a bit weird.
And she drinks a miniature.
She does. She has loads and loads of miniatures. And I'm guessing, I don't know, what you get this from hotels? She collects them, doesn't
yeah.
she? So she's got lots of little tiny bottles of
I think
like
that's
crapper.
A nice little sweet detail as well.
It is. It's very cute.
And this is written by a woman as well.
Who is it? I'm terrible. I didn't check who it was.
It's written by Diane Thomas.
Oh, I don't know her name.
No, she hasn't written a great deal.
Because it's pretty brilliant writing. It's very, like, the back and forth kind of sexy banter is really good. Really, really good.
But I think that's very important for a film from this era, because you didn't get a lot of women writing action movies or
adventure movies. Well, hence again why I picked it, because I think I didn't go and see... I love things like Raiders, and there's always really good women in those films. But, I didn't see many films that sort of had any kind of a female perspective at all. I think this one was quite rare.
Yeah.
Around this time, anyway. Was it 84 or something?
84.
Yeah. And it was obviously directed by Robert Zemeckis, who
has
done Back to the Future the year after that. And, you know, lots of incredible everything with Tom Hanks. But this is this is speaking to me, definitely, as a little kid, like as a 10-year-old kid. This was my kind of movie.
This basically got him the Back to the Future gig.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah, yeah,
because he'd done a film before this that was a flop.
Oh, really?
And he had the Back to the Future script. And no one would make it. So he did this and it was a massive hit.
That's so cool. I love that. The Hollywood one thing leads to another, doesn't it? Yeah. No, well, I mean, quite right too. But in its own right, this film is just, I love it. I can watch it again and again.
Yeah.
And the film that comes after it, Jewel of the Nile, which is the two of them teaming up again. Just absolutely brilliant. Loads of fun.
I don't like Jewel of the Nile.
You don't like it?
No.
Why not?
It's not a very good film.
It is a good film.
It starts off with them going... a bit bored.
Should we have another adventure?
Yeah.
But you know, they met that their love was formed in the crucible of adventure. Like, they can't just go and live in an apartment and like do nothing.
Yeah, well, you know, you go play squash or something, don't
you? Didn't you want to see those characters again?
I saw them in the When the Going Gets Tough music video. That was enough for me.
With Billy Ocean, that was brilliant.
That was the trailer for the film. I remember really? Going to see whatever fucking film it was that year.
Yeah.
And the trailer was the music video to nice. When the Going Gets Tough with Kathleen Turner and Michael Douglas and Danny DeVito with backing singers.
That's right, and they put shades on because it's amusing in some way. That they look, we've got shades on. It's funny, isn't it? I loved that video.
Yeah. It's a good song.
It's a brilliant song. No, mate, everything about it is good. You're wrong about Jewel of the Nile, but we should just move on.
I'm not. Anyway, so...
I'm sorry for you.
Well, you should be. So she's going to go and meet her agent.
Yeah.
And she bumps into an old lady on the way out, Mrs. Irwin.
Yes.
Who gives her a package.
But before that, I really like the detail, because she clearly is a bit sort of, you know, she lives in her own head and she's in this apartment on her own with the cat. When she finishes her drink and the cat finishes its cat food, she smashes her glass in the fireplace.
That's right.
As a kind of like... Sod it, you know.
But
it just gives her a bit of a thrill. What?
But that's not all.
What?
She smashes the plate as well.
Yes, she does. The cat's plate, so he can join in. Yeah.
That's just stupid.
You look cross.
That's just.
Who's going to clean that up?
Exactly. It's wasteful.
I liked it.
As it turns out, it doesn't matter because soon she'll be burgled.
No, I know exactly, but it's quite a good character note to say. Sometimes she just goes, "Oh, sod it," and I like. You know, it was. Just, everything is a little signifier of what's to come and how you know how she'll react. In a crisis, and I liked it. It was a nice detail.
How she reacts in a crisis is to throw a glass at a fire.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, no, I'll go with
she'll,
that.
She'll find another part of herself and kind of, you know, she's a bit of a timid sort of unadventurous person. So that, and everyone says before she goes, like, "Oh, you can't go to Colombia. You can't do all these things that you're about to do in this film, because you're not the sort of character who can cope with that kind of stuff." But there's little signs that she's got it in her. She just has to find it.
She's mousy, like, as IMDb.
She's mousy, yes.
As I got from the IMDb.
Exactly. Yeah.
So she goes to meet her agent, but meanwhile, a baddie turns up who we later find out is called Zolo.
Yes, Zolo.
Zolo.
Yeah.
Who
sounds
is,
like a Bond character.
He does. Always sounds like Han Solo's Spanish cousin.
Spanish cousin who doesn't live in space.
No.
Or
no.
Spain.
Or Zorro, pronounced by a Japanese person.
Let's just move on.
Let's okay. not go Mr. Charmaine. But he's trying to get into her apartment. A janitor sees it and Zolo stabs him.
Yeah, like it's pretty brutal.
I'm guessing he eats him because you never see his body being found.
Yes, I think he eats him or maybe puts him in the rubbish chute. They have those in America.
Or throws him in the fire.
Perhaps. Either way, he disappears and no one cares about the janitor. He's just a janitor. But yeah, he's brutally murdered, which is dealt with, you know, there's not a lot of brutal violence in this film.
No.
It's just all, you know, suggested off screen, isn't it?
You see his knife, flick knife, and that's kind of all you
There are quite a few moments in this where there's like a blade and the light just glints off it. I like that
in this.
But it kind of says this is a cartoon, not... And this is going to go into his heart and stop it beating, and blood's going to go over.
Like, yeah, there's a few moments in this where it's kind of like a cartoon.
Yeah,
we'll get
to
them.
But I like it.
Yeah. But yeah, so Joan meets her agent. Her agent's lusting over loads of really horrible looking men.
Yeah.
The one that turns up with like a bouffant, he's like a muscle man.
That's horrible.
And he's got this like huge bouffant and he just does that wink. It's like, mate.
You would, wouldn't
the
you?
The state of you.
No.
Yeah,
and her agent is kind of a. Her tongue's hanging out, but clearly, it all establishes that Joan is, you know, nobody is the right guy for her, because the guy that she wants is a romantic fiction. He's made up. She's made him up.
Yeah.
And he can't possibly exist, can he?
No.
No. Okay, well, end of film.
End of film.
Cool.
But then we found out that she gets a phone call from her sister, Elaine. Yeah. Oh, no, that's not yet. Sorry. Her sister is in the process of talking to her agent. She reveals their sister is in Colombia, but her husband had been murdered.
Yes,
and cut to pieces.
Yes, exactly. The first time, it's really good in the script. The first time it's mentioned before they tell you the whole story.
Yeah,
the agent just says to Joan, "Have they found her husband yet?" And Joan just says, "Well, you know, just one piece of him." It's like, Jesus, what happened to that guy?
Which bit?
Yeah, exactly. As we now later know, the crocodiles were probably involved in his demise, sadly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And her sister Elaine is played by the actress Marianne Traynor.
Oh, yeah.
Who
don't tell me she's Meghan Traynor's mum.
I don't know about
I wondered about that, just because Traynor's an unusual surname. But
she was in everything in the 80s.
Oh, was she?
She's in The Goonies as the mum.
Oh, really? She
was Robert Zemeckis' wife at the time.
Oh, well, there you go. That's why then, isn't it? It's one of those.
But yeah, she was in everything. She's very good and sadly no longer with us.
Oh, is she not?
No.
That's a terrible shame.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, she was very good, actually.
Yeah.
She didn't get loads to do, but the bit she did, she kind of did grab your attention, didn't she? She's very good.
But she gets knocked out with a pair of bolos, whatever they're called.
What? A pair of what?
Bolos, are they
Is that
called?
The thing that the kids got? Yeah, so that was a really weird scene and kind of slightly took me off guard. But she comes out of her hotel or whatever in
all ready to go in like a muscle car.
Yeah,
which seems a bit odd.
Yeah, there's like the most incredible sort of red sports car. Yeah. And she's trying to like she puts on a hat and sunglasses that suggest she's trying to go unnoticed, and then gets in this giant penis on wheels.
Yeah,
is about to drive away, and this kid who's been playing with his friends just like swings his whatever it is.
It's like Clarkson escaping the paparazzi.
Yeah, yes, exactly, in like a really big noisy car. Mm. And she gets kidnapped and the kid drives off in her car with her in it to clearly take her to the crime bosses who have killed her husband.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep. And so Joan gets home. Her flat's been completely ransacked. Romeo hasn't been murdered, which he would have been.
No.
He would have been,
wouldn't
he?
No, because cats are really, they're quite nimble. He'd have just run away and hid.
Zolo would have, or whatever it's called. Is it Zolo? Zolo.
Zolo, yeah.
He would have murdered that cat.
No, I don't think
He'd have probably done worse to that cat.
Worn him as a hat.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, probably. Yeah. No, you'd be surprised how nimble cats are. They can get away from, you know...
That's true.
...terrifying bladesmen.
But she gets a phone call while she's in her flat from her sister Elaine, who says, "Were you sent a package?"
Yes.
Yes.
And she was.
It's a treasure map.
It is.
You have to bring it to Columbia or they're going to kill me.
Yep, exactly.
I can't go to Columbia, she says.
And we know she can't because by now we've already set up in the merest amount of time that she is not the kind of person who can respond to a call like this. And it's all in her, Kathleen Turner's face. She does it really nicely, actually.
Yeah.
She doesn't overplay it. And actually, they get you into the action of this really quickly. Like, they establish her. I think it's worth noting how quickly and nimbly you know everything about her you need to know to send her off to Columbia and start this crazy adventure.
Yes.
Like, it's seconds before she's, like, sliding down that mud chute in the jungle with Michael Douglas.
Yeah, well, she arrives in Columbia and Zolo puts her on the wrong bus.
Yep.
Danny DeVito, who is involved at this point, and his cousin... Ira.
That's right, Ira.
Ira.
He's kvetching on the phone to Ira. Yeah.
They're the baddies in this.
Yeah.
And
but there's so much comedy in it as well. So the baddies, they're kind of a threat, but they're a cartoon threat. They're not like, they're kind of stupid.
Well,
so,
DeVito's just come off of Taxi at this point, hasn't he?
Yes,
so he's fairly big from the telly.
Absolutely.
Not a big movie star yet.
And he is undoubtedly the comic relief. He's not there to be genuinely threatening or frightening at all.
He's very good in this.
Yeah. No, he's brilliant. He's totally brilliant. And I think the humour going through it as well, I can't really enjoy an action film if they haven't bothered to inject loads of humour into it. It just leaves me a bit cold. I like my explosions to come with some gags as well. And this is full of them. So.
Me too.
Good.
Good. So I'm glad we have an accord.
Excellent.
But she gets on the wrong bus and then the bus goes the wrong way.
And it's all full of like people in hats with pigs and chickens.
I was going to say, there's always a lady with a pig on the bus.
There's always a lady. Always. An angry lady with an angry pig. And actually the airport is just full of people with farm animals and kind of unusual country bumpkin hats.
And birds.
Yes, exactly. Birds in cages. And it's kind of ethnically... It's sort of painting a certain picture of the country, South America, well, the continent, South America. But, it sets the scene. She's a fish out of water. Continue.
She distracts the bus driver sufficiently that he crashes into a Jeep.
Like a typical woman.
Full of caged birds.
Yes, exactly.
Caged birds that perhaps would be set free.
Yes, perhaps if there was a crash, for example.
Yeah.
So, and obviously it turns out that Jeep belongs to Jack.
Jack T. Colton.
Exactly, Jack T. Colton.
Bum-hungry jungle hustler.
Why is he bum-hungry?
I read a synopsis of this film once that called him...
And they described him as a bum-hungry.
Not bum-hungry. They just called him, an action-hungry jungle hustler.
Okay,
so
I like that.
Over
that
time,
works.
I've converted it
he's
to bum-hungry.
Okay, fair enough. I mean,
Because he is.
Well, he is. And he certainly, when her clothing becomes more ripped, he certainly starts to focus on her thighs quite a lot. But,
He's a red-blooded male, Julia.
Well, I was about to say, aren't we all? But I'm not. So, I can still see the appeal.
Those without bum-hungerness... cast the first stone.
I have never thought of myself as bum hungry, but I will look to that in future.
A rich tapestry.
We should all be aware.
Basically dodgy stab man Zolo.
Yeah.
He tells her that, don't worry, there's more buses coming.
Yeah.
And then he comes back to her a second later, draws a gun.
Yep.
And says, give me the map.
And we clearly think, well, he's a bastard, he's a baddie.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out he's a cop.
He's not a cop.
He's like a bent copper.
He's a military policeman.
He's a military policeman.
So he is a cop.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, and is that, I couldn't work out, there was uniforms, he was evil, but I couldn't work out if it was like
institutionally evil. I wasn't stammering, by the way. I was doing an 80s rap. like kind of 19.
Oh, yeah. No.
Because it was in then.
Very, very trendy. Yeah. But so the bus has crashed.
Yeah.
Then as she's about to be gunned down by this guy in exchange for the map, Then his gunshots come from unseen, and it's Jack's walking past.
He whistles.
Right. So his star register is quite low key.
Yeah,
because I suppose they'd both be pretty big stars by this point, but he was the first name above the title. It was starring Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner.
I don't know, because she's huge at this point.
No, no, she is.
She's done Body Heat and Mamma Two Brains.
I'm guessing it was a fairly even Stevens
film. I reckon so.
But he literally is just like a figure across going across the top of a hill whistling.
Yeah.
Which is very cool.
This is like pre-Wall Street, isn't it? So he's just like an actor rather than Michael Douglas.
Yes, well, perhaps. Yeah, maybe this is what sets him on the course to
I think so.
Being. But yeah, the star entrance for her is kind of a bit more... You know, she's in close up. He's far away. He's like, can you tell I did a film degree? Yeah, totally did.
Can you tell I didn't?
Yes. What's mise en scène, John? Go on. What is it?
It's French for and anyway.
Yeah, that'll do.
Isn't it the sequel to Les Misérables? What is it then? Go on.
Yeah, it's mise en scène. It's like what you see on the screen. Like it's the picture.
Well, why don't you just say that?
Okay, fine. Because I wanted to upset and embarrass you.
Well, you have. So I'll edit that out. And most of the podcast. Yeah. In fact, this one might get deleted.
Yeah, this one's just not going out, is it? No, fair enough. No, I understand. I'm in a capricious mood.
But Jack Colton arrives. They have a shootout where they're both fucking terrible at shooting each other.
Yeah, she's hiding under the crashed bus.
Yes.
Just like cowering. So at this point, it's definitely like man coming in to save woman. It's all a bit like, oh, really?
Mm.
But, you know, it's 85, 84, 84. So fair enough. But yeah, but then he kind of eventually finds her. He gets where he chases off Zollo.
Yeah.
And then there's that moment where she's lying under the bus just looking and she can see his feet, his boots. And then he kind of leans down and just says, hi.
Yeah.
And that's kind of his first, I mean, you hear him sort of like muttering to himself, but that's like his opening line of the film.
Well, because his birds have gone.
Yes, exactly.
He had, what was it, 15 grand's worth of birds?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, if only there was another bird he could set free.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
You can tell I didn't do a film studies course.
No, but you know what, you probably could have done.
Yeah.
So patronising.
I did do media studies.
You did media studies,
or media production.
is that why I had to press the record button for this podcast, John?
You wanted to and you filmed it.
It's really big and red. It's very exciting. Of course I wanted to press it. It's brilliant. Christ anyway, Christ. So he says hi.
Yeah, he says hi. And basically she says, I need to get to a phone. And he says, oh, there's not one for miles.
Yeah.
And she says, I'll give you $50.
That's right.
Which is in, you know, whatever universe you're in, that is insulting.
No, it is insulting. And he reacts accordingly. And then they begin this kind of like bartering war.
In about 5 minutes, everything I own in the world is going to be wet. So can you lighten up, please? I really don't have the time.
I'll pay you. You don't understand. It's a matter of life and death. If I don't get to
How much?
$50?
Oh, shit.
Well, you said you just lost everything you owned.
Not my sense of humor.
Well, I'll pay you $100. $200.
I'll do it. For five.
What? I'll pay you $250.
Now, I ain't cheap, but I can be had. My minimum price for taking a stranded woman to a telephone is $400.
Will you take $375 in traveler's checks?
American Express?
Of course.
Got a deal.
Where eventually he says the minimum I'd do it for is $400. And she's like, $375 in traveler's checks?
He goes, American Express?
Of course.
Okay.
And the deal is done. So you can tell he's like, he's not a sentimental man, but he'll certainly do anything for money.
Well, yeah.
Which sets up again the uncertainty in their coming relationship. Like, is he trustworthy? Is he after the money? Is he after... You know, is he out for himself, basically? Will he really help when the chips are down?
But there's an annoying trope, which I'm guessing probably started with this film. I'm not sure. No, probably didn't, what we're talking about. But there's an annoying trope of, hey, that's your suitcase, you carry it.
Yes.
Even though she's clearly a woman. And I know you probably shouldn't
in
assume.
In high heels.
But it looks like a heavy suitcase.
It is heavy.
And she's wearing high heels and it's raining. At least just offer to carry it for her.
Yeah, but it's quite cute how he does it, though. So, again, it's just sort of, it's playing with the gender politics of the time, which I think is quite... ahead of its time in a way, but he picks up the suitcase. Well, she just stands there looking at it a little bit princessy and walks away. He looks at it, picks it up and just gets level with her and just drops it by her feet as if to say, and that's not happening. And I quite liked that. I quite like that he was like...
He eventually flings it into the woods.
He does. I mean, yeah, that was a bit extreme, but yeah. You know, it's fair enough. She was dragging behind and she's waddling along in her heels, yeah.
He does say, is there anything precious in here?
Yes, she does. He checks before he hoys it into a ravine.
Yeah. And then she's about to be cross with him and then she falls down a mudslide.
Yes,
and
yeah, then she calls him a bastard and then off she goes down the mudslide and hilariously landing at the bottom... She gets there first and kind of just absolutely covered in mud, head to foot. They are drenched.
She lands legs akimbo.
She lands kind of like leaning back with her legs apart and he lands with his face in her crotch.
Which is how he got cancer.
If you believe Michael Douglas, yes,
that's what he said.
Oh, my God.
That's what he said.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. I hadn't made the connection.
So he probably caught it from this film.
Maybe he caught it from the mud. Shall we move on?
Yeah. So Zollo, we find out at this point, as I said, he's commander of the military police.
Yes,
and
that's
he
right.
is the man who killed Elaine's husband.
Yes, he's a bastard.
He is a bastard.
And he's very fond of crocodiles.
He is.
They're his pets. Yes, not a nice fellow. Again, we don't know much about him. In fact, we don't know anything about him.
No.
That's where the cartoon bit comes in. The baddies are just...
Cartoons.
Baddies.
They might as well be on the FUD.
Yeah, no, literally, yes. They all have guns and crocodiles and it's all just adversity for our heroes to get through. But I don't need them to be anything more than that, quite frankly.
We're more interested in heroes, aren't we?
Much more.
Yeah, yeah, but talking sure. of which, Michael Douglas chops off the heels of her shoes.
He does. I found that quite arousing.
You lost what?
I lost my button. My button.
You're going to lose a lot more than that.
These were Italian.
Now they're practical.
Okay.
I don't know why.
she says they're expensive, and he says, now they're practical.
Yeah, no, no, she said, no, no, she says, those were Italian. That's were it. Italian.
Yeah.
And now they're not Italian? No, they are still Italian. But yeah, no, he gets his machete and just hacks at her shoes. And, you know, that's decisive actions like that I find terribly exciting.
He also says a great line here because they arrive at a creek.
Yeah.
And they
yeah.
can't cross it. There's a rickety old bridge.
That's right. Yeah. They're being chased.
They're being chased by Zollo and his men. And he says, I could have been a cosmetic surgeon, 500K a year to be up to my neck in tits and ass. Which again is how he got cancer.
Stop saying that.
That's why
just make it clear we're really glad he's fine now.
I'm very glad he's fine. I love Michael Douglas. And you know what? I haven't read Kathleen Turner's book, but I'm pretty sure that she said she liked working with him and he was nice. Because I assume she did, because she did a sequel.
Well, exactly.
And then they did War of the Roses as well.
Exactly. You wouldn't do that unless you were very fond of each other.
And I think they're absolutely dynamite together
as well.
Do you
think they were doing it?
Oh, come on. He's a sex
Most actors were doing it when they were filming films.
And he's a sex addict, self-confessed.
Oh, really? Oh, well, yeah. they were definitely doing it then. How exciting.
Yeah, I love War of the Roses as well. I think that's a great film.
It is brilliant. I mean, she's just very good at that sort of... I don't know. Well, I can't even the word, but she's really good at playing those parts.
Well, she's...
Where it's kind of who she becomes at the end of this film.
Yes.
This kind of coiffured, sort of like doesn't take any prisoners, slightly bitchy, kind of kick-ass woman. Yeah, and I like her playing those roles.
She's very versatile, because if you think of The Man with Two Brains, she's playing completely against what she usually plays.
I know, and then in Friends, when she plays Chandler's dad.
Oh, yeah.
So brilliant, because her voice by then is so deep. It's like, again, as an actress, known for your beauty, and you've been, you know, sort of the top of Hollywood for years, to then take a role playing, you want me to play a man who's yeah, fuck it, why not? She must be a total dude to say yes to that. I think that's that point.
She got very harshly treated.
Yeah, she did.
Because she got poorly, and then she got old, and people were mean about
it. Not allowed to get old in Hollywood if you're a lady.
No.
Whereas Michael Douglas... You can get as old as you like.
Yeah, you can still do Ant-Man films when you're about 88.
Yes, exactly. And no one bats an eyelid. But that's Hollywood. It stinks.
Yeah, at least he didn't get cancer from doing Ant-Man. Yeah.
Stop going on about the cancer.
So
very glad he's better.
Yes. Oh, I'm very pleased for him.
Hello. Hello, I'm John Holmes, and yes, the last thing you need is another podcast that takes apart a television show and hacks through it like a cough going through a pensioner. Except wait, because this is The One Show Show, in which myself and my guests force ourselves to watch a week's worth of TV's The One Show and then analyse it all in far too much detail. It sounds like a terrible idea, and it is for us. But for you, it's entertainment gold that's all over a programme you yourself have no intention of ever watching. The One Show Show, every Tuesday and Wednesday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, so they manage to cross over and they find a sort of cargo plane.
That's right.
With a dead pilot in it. It's full of herb.
That's right. It's full of weed. The pilot's wearing a Grateful Dead jacket.
If you need any more indications.
Yeah, exactly. And so obviously the thing that Jack decides to do is start a bonfire inside, because they're sheltering from the rain. It's constantly pissing it down in the jungle. Yeah. So they're sheltering from the rain and he starts a fire and just keeps lobbing more brown onto the fire and just getting really high off it.
Came down here on a coffee boat about a year and a half ago, right? Christ, what a job that was. But I couldn't get over that ocean, though, you know? Yeah. I love the ocean. You know, you just kind of get out there all by yourself. Nobody else around. It's beautiful. So that's what I want. Try to get enough money together, buy a boat, sail around the world.
So you're just gonna sail away? All by yourself?
Yeah.
That's why they call it the rainforest.
Is it? I don't get it.
Because it's raining amidst the
Oh, sorry. You weren't joking. You were just being like geographically correct.
That's why I did
like
a,
you, John.
I did a film studies course.
Did you do geography GCSE?
Yes.
Oh, well done.
I didn't actually. I did history.
Oh, yeah. No, I did too. Yeah.
I didn't want to do geography because it's boring.
It is. Deltas.
I'd rather watch Romancing the Stone.
Lakes. Yeah, me too.
And learn about stones and history. So basically he finds a full bottle of tequila.
He does. Is it tequila? Is that what it is?
I assume it's tequila.
Yeah. It's something sort of brown and strong looking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it, basically the truth comes out about the map and she tells him the truth about her sister.
Yes, because she kind of has pretended that her sister's not well, she's going to go and visit her, or she doesn't want to tell him the whole story because she clearly isn't quite sure if she can trust him.
Yeah.
Obviously with a treasure map and some guy who's just like clearly makes money on his wits, you know, she doesn't know the
He's a bum hungry jungle hustler. You can't trust these people.
And I can't even say that because that's like some kind of tongue twister. But he's one of those and you know, you can never be sure of those types of people.
But because of the cool, the calming, serene sensation and the air of the herb,
of the marijuana,
and the pot, the tequila,
yes,
has obviously loosened her. What's the word?
Tongue.
You
didn't know the word tongue.
I forgot it.
Are you all right? Are you having a stroke?
I've been ill.
Sorry.
You're being very harsh on an ill man.
No, I'm ill. You're better now.
I'm getting better.
Okay, fine.
I'm not all the way there. But he tells her, this is when he tells her his name is Jack T. Colton.
Yeah.
She asks him what the T stands for. And he says it's for trustworthy.
That's right. Because she has mentioned a couple of times during this conversation that a real... No, is that when they have the conversation sometime during the film? She talks about a real man, and a real man, one of the most important things about a real man is that he's trustworthy.
I think it is before this, yeah.
And so I think he picks up on that. Mm. He basically, in a slightly, you know, clever con man way, starts to say things to her that he knows she wants to hear.
Yes.
And actually, when she's startled by the skeleton of the dead pilot, you know, as she's hacking through the jungle and she's the first one to see this skeleton in aviators, brilliant. Mm-hmm. It's very cool. And she kind of screams and falls back. And he doesn't just sort of protect her. He holds her. It's very romantic. And I'm like, is he doing that because he wants to? Because he's seen a bit of a glimpse of her thigh when she was hacking through the jungle. Like, is he getting a bit of a horn for her? Or is he just like, I know what I'll do. I'll kind of play the hero because he sees that as a way to get her trust. Bit of both, maybe. You can never really tell in the early parts of the film whether he really likes her or he's just eye on the main chance.
Well, it's good that she passes out from the ganja.
She does. And the tequila or whatever she's been drinking, yeah. Her face plants into the sack next to him.
And doesn't he kind of, like, leave her
he
to
looks
it?
After her, yeah, which is very sweet.
He doesn't try and look at her bum or anything,
He doesn't sexually abuse her or steal her map. He does have a look at the map, though.
He does.
Because obviously he's still thinking, well, there's treasure, so I wonder, you know, if I could just maybe memorise it or something.
Mm.
So he's definitely taking an interest in not just her, but in what she could bring him.
He sees something on the map, doesn't he, about her being the devil's fork or something.
That's right. And we already know, because he rescued it from the wreckage of his Jeep, that he's got this dream of owning a yacht? A beautiful boat. And
in Tarrant.
Yes, exactly. So yachts is like so my thing.
Yeah.
Any films with yachts in, like, I love them.
Did you like Some Like It Yacht?
I did, actually, yes. It's good. Although disappointingly few yachts in it. Oh, no, there was a yacht. The millionaire on the yacht. There was a bloody yacht.
If only it had Chandler from Friends in it.
Oh, nice. No, there's going to be a sailing collection to literally everything I like on TV now. I know it.
Yeah, but Jack's dream is to have a boat and sail around the world.
That's right. He's a loner. He doesn't want to be around other people. He wants to get onto the ocean, and just disappear.
And she says, all by yourself, Jack Colton?
That sounds kind of lonely.
Yeah, I like that moment.
Yeah, no, it was lovely because it's clearly where you can see in her eyes that she's like, I'd quite like to come with you. Mm. But she doesn't say it, obviously, because, you know, he's still finding her quite annoying at this point. But yeah.
But the next day they go and see El Guapo from The Three Amigos.
Yes, they do. That's right.
That was bugging me for a few minutes.
That totally didn't click with me until you said it just then.
And they're being threatened by local gangstitos.
Is that Mexican word?
Or should I say bandito? I don't know.
They do the kind of classic thing where they're walking down the kind of this very, it's a very small village, isn't it? But they're walking down the main street.
He is carrying a gun, though.
Yeah.
To be fair.
He's got a gun in his backpack, you know.
He's literally holding a shotgun.
Oh, has he got it in his hand? That's right. No, because he turns off the safety when they get close, doesn't he? But and the guy does the whole, hey, hombre thing. It's a bit like, it's all a bit cartoon again.
Yeah.
But clearly they feel threatened, and then they're told to go to the bellmaker's house.
Because they need a car.
That's right. And clearly you can't really see much. It's like it's a compound.
Yeah.
There's a front door with a little window, you know, one of those slidey window things in it.
Yeah.
And as they approach, she's naive. He's a bit more wise to the whole thing. He's like, yeah, the bellmaker, my ass. It's the local. And she says, drug dealer. And he sort of tries to quieten her down. Yeah. And then they end up in a standoff where the drug dealers open the door and is pointing a gun at them one way, and they turn around and the villagers are all angrily pointing guns at them the other way.
And then he says, okay, Joan Wilder, get us out of this one.
Write us out of this one. Yeah. Goes,
Joan Wilder!
Okay, Joan Wilder, write us out of this one.
Joan Wilder? Joan Wilder? Vision Wilder? You are Joan Wilder, the novelist?
Yes, I am.
I read your books. I read all your books. Come in. Esta es Juanita Wilder, la que escribe las novelas que le leo los sábados. Juanita.
Le damos la bienvenida, ¿verdad, muchachos?
Juanita es Juanita. Come in.
I'm your biggest fan.
The John Wilder? Uh-huh. It's totally brilliant. So, yeah, she does. She gets them out of it because, again, the script is so brilliant, although they just track back and put this in. Her agent says when they're in her apartment... you can't go to Colombia. Talks a bit more about Colombia, two or three lines, and says, I mean, it's full of, I don't know, she describes it as full of certain kinds of people. Your books do so well over there.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And it's suggesting perhaps they're a bit, I don't know, simplistic or, you know, but they appeal to that kind of audience.
Yeah.
And then Bob's your uncle, who's her biggest fan? The drug dealer.
Yeah.
So it's great. He's got all her books and he opens the gates to his compound. It's like incredible. There's a pool. And it's just really beautiful in total contrast to where they've just been in the village, which is poor and everything.
He's got
this
a cowboy
really nice
hat.
Character. He has. And he tries it on and says, look, I am like your Jesse. It's really sweet.
She's like, no, you're not.
Yeah. It's a, no, no, no. No. And you smell.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, no, but it's nice. They found a friend, basically.
And at this point, Jack kind of can't help himself and says, do you got a Xerox machine?
Yes, exactly, because he clearly wants to copy the map.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, he's a bit transparent about that. But unfortunately, the Xerox machine is broken.
That's right.
So he can't.
And then Zollo and the army turn up.
Yeah.
And then they said, have you got a car? And he goes, oh, no, I haven't got a car. I don't know what I'm doing.
That's a terrible accent, John.
Doing him as a Japanese man. I haven't got a car. I've got a little mule.
You just sound like someone who's got something hot in their mouth.
Me saying,
I haven't got a car. I've got a little mule.
That's me saying, I can't do the accent.
No.
I haven't got a car. I've got a little mule. And we're meant to think he's got a little
Pepe,
ass.
A mule. That's right. Yeah. He's got, because he's, this is bad news because Jack Colton is bum hungry. it's a totally different film now. Jeez, you. Yeah. So anyway,
but it turns out
they're trapped, basically.
Yeah.
And then he says, "I'll get my mule.
I'll get a little mule."
And then comes crashing through the front door of his compound this kind of very souped-up black pickup.
Yes.
With little mule written on the side, and three of them are in the front, and they basically then are being chased by the whole of the military police.
Yeah.
Through the village until they get to this river.
But he's got a pretend bridge, a pretend ramp.
That's right. He's got gadgets. So it's one thing I thought they could have done more with in this film. Mm. It's quite hard to do because they're in the middle of nowhere and it's sort of a rural setting. But this guy clearly is very, very rich, has this nice car.
I guess he's supposed to be like a kind of Paolo Escobar
yeah,
type person.
Basically.
But really, he'd control all the police, so that wouldn't be a problem.
Well, he would, exactly. Yeah. You're right. Like, it'd be corrupt as anything. Mm. But anyway, to outrun the police, he has this remote control bridge that he can make. Well, it's a ramp, isn't it?
Yeah.
He makes it appear as they're driving towards the...
He says, I'll make a ramp for you.
No, stop doing the terrible, terrible accent. It's just bad.
Oh, that's better.
Anyway, yeah. They jump over the river and then he blips the remote control as they pass. And basically...
The ramp then turns into a wall.
It turns into a little sort of a buffer and the
stop
Jeep
them.
Hits in. Please, John,
sorry.
I can't bear
sorry.
It. Anyway, and they thwart the secret police, or whoever they are, the military police, and they escape.
Yeah.
And then there's this really weird scene in the field. Is that what happens next? They're in the field by the tree that looks like the Devil's Fork.
Oh, yes, yes.
And suddenly Kathleen Turner is like this hella sexy, kind of wild, crazy-haired sort of sex pot. She's like, she had this sort of messy bun that's been slowly falling out throughout obviously all the chases and the
that's
falling
right.
down mud chutes and stuff. And then suddenly she's like in this sort of, you know, her clothes have also slightly come apart. She's got like a very low V-neck and a side split that's kind of revealing loads of leg, and her hair's all beautiful, and she starts sticking like flowers behind her ear. And she's just suddenly, clearly that's where Jack probably looks at her and goes, hello. Because she looks amazing. She's always looked beautiful, but she's kind of, they've played it down. And suddenly it's almost like there's a filter on the lens.
Yeah.
She's surrounded by pink flowers.
Beautiful very, lady.
It's a very, Jesus Christ. But it's a very non-action film shot, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
From what we've been looking at, all sort of dust and dirt, and they're always covered in mud, and suddenly she looks like a painting. She looks really beautiful.
Right, you got a proper, this isn't an action director, this is a proper director.
Exactly, so. Exactly.
But they go to a village where Danny DeVito's phoning Ira.
Yes.
To say, yeah, I've lost them.
He's
fetching
to Ira, yeah. As he always is.
And then he says, Ira. And then they turn up in El Guapo's mule.
Yeah.
And he says, see you later, bye.
Yeah.
And then he says, Ira, you're the luckiest son of a bitch.
Yes, exactly.
Something like that.
So the nice drug dealer has given them a lift to Cartagena. Is it Cartagena or the nearest town?
I think it's Cartagena.
It is Cartagena. That's where they need to end up. And there's clearly going to be some kind of
festival. Oh, no, it's not Cartagena because that's where they meet at the end.
No,
isn't
no, that's
it?
Where they are trying to get to. But he takes them to the nearest town.
Nearest town with a phone.
And a Xerox machine.
And a Xerox machine.
Yeah. And it's clearly where they're due to say goodbye because all she has to do is get on a bus tomorrow to Cartagena. She's phoned the kidnappers who will obligingly wait for her to catch a bus the next day.
Lovely.
Which is nice of them. They're very reasonable baddies.
They are.
And they seem to be treating Elaine quite well. She's sitting there on the deck of the boat eating steak with the guy that killed her husband. She seems quite happy.
Hopefully it's not her husband.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, didn't think about that. That's horrific. Oh, my God. Yeah, so they're kind of, and then is this where the kind of the romantic subplot kind of...
This is where he says to her, you go and get yourself cleaned up in the room.
Yep.
He's going to Xerox the map.
Yep.
And
although
he
doesn't tell her. He's playing a bit underhand with the whole...
He says he's going to get them some new clothes.
Yep.
Because she gives them the traveller's checks.
Yes, Yeah, that's right.
Because a deal's a deal.
Exactly.
And then he says, the least I can do is buy you dinner.
That's it. But clearly his motives then are a bit of, well, I fancy you, yeah. and also a bit of, and I'm getting that map because yeah. it means that whatever's at the end of this treasure map could be my yacht, it could be my key to...
Also, he's slowly kind of grooming her because he's saying, sorry yeah. for that unfortunate expression, but he's basically...
You just stroked the air there. I'm not quite sure what you were stroking, but
it's
yeah.
the idea. Ideas don't have visuals. He's basically been planting the idea for a while that, hey, if we steal the thing,
yes.
then you've got more leverage.
Exactly, but he wants to get his hands on it. He doesn't yeah. really give a stuff about some woman called Elaine he's never met before, but he's also starting to get slightly more...
What if it was Elaine Page, though?
Oh, well, that'd be a different thing.
Looking back, I should have played it.
I mean, none of us want to see the end of that, you know, her lovely Sunday show on Radio 2. No. Where, have you ever heard it where she does, there's an answer machine and local Amdram groups ring in to advertise their shows. It's called The Breaker Legs.
Oh.
It's the best radio I've ever heard.
All right.
It's always the most delightful thing. So, like, someone from, you know, Chipping Norton will be performing Chicago. Mm-hmm. And a man from Chipping Norton will ring up and go, hiya, Elaine. It's Joe here from Chicago. And we'll kind of do the accent and do an advert for the... It's my favourite thing of all time.
And he was fed to crocodiles.
Probably, yes. Mm. Yeah, they probably all were in the end. But no, Elaine Page's show is an institution. It must never end.
No.
If it's her life at stake, then that changes everything.
It certainly does. She's only about 3 feet tall.
She's tiny, yeah.
She is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Aww.
It does a lovely giggle. She's always giggling.
Oh, we like Elaine Page.
She's
ace. Anyway.
We digress.
So, So, yeah, so basically, Joan Wilder gets on her... uniform, new clothes.
She does.
She looks a bit dowdy.
Well, he sort of buys her sort of sexy peasant outfit.
Yeah.
So it's like a sort of silky pink blouse, but it's off the shoulder, little kind of, you know, tassely skirt type thing. I'm guessing it's sort of what you would buy in a town like that. But
he's dressed as kind of a bullfighter.
He looks kind of a little bit like, yeah, he's wearing white trousers.
He looks good though, doesn't he?
I don't know, it's a bit Travolta.
I like
it. If Travolta were a bullfighter.
Because he's got that kind of tassely black belt as
yes,
well, which I quite
yeah.
like.
Yeah, I mean, clearly fancies himself. It wouldn't have done it for me, white trousers, just immediately.
What about his dancing though?
God, it's so cringeworthy. So cringeworthy. She's doing the whole, he gets her up to dance and yeah. she's doing the whole, who, me? Oh, no, I couldn't. No, I'm terrible. Oh, I'll tread on your feet. I'm such a klutz. Hmm. And he's being super confident and super cool and kind of trying to.
He's kind of going, cha-cha-cha.
He's cha-cha-cha-ing. He's yeah. giving her all his moves.
Yeah.
In a way that makes you slightly disappointed when she falls for it. Because it's like, ugh, he's so slimy.
It's not as as what's coming up in a minute.
Oh, well. I don't know. Was that
It's definitely
Oh, he gives her a necklace as well.
Yeah.
Because they know the thing that they're looking
is the
El Corazon, which is the heart.
Yes.
Which is the heart-shaped emerald that we now know is the thing they're after. And he gives her a heart necklace, which again, I thought, now, is this just him trying to win her over so he can get... Because he could get the map. He could just take it. But he's clearly getting feelings for it.
I think
feelings in his dinky, like maybe feelings elsewhere.
I can't believe you just said that.
I can't believe I called it his dinky.
No, I can't either.
I'm very sorry.
That's all right.
Carry on.
His
old man.
He's Pee-wee. He's Pee-wee. I took it to mean that he had genuine feelings for her.
I thought so, too.
And I also took it to mean that this is his way of saying goodbye, to give her that while he buggers off to go and get the treasure.
Well, yes, perhaps. Like, you can have this one, I'm getting the real one, and I'm going to get my boat. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, probably. Like a consolation prize.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they end up, because Danny DeVito tries to steal her bag and gets caught by a fat woman.
That was brilliant. And in the titles, if you saw the credits at the end, she is credited as Hefty Woman.
Hefty Woman.
Hefty Woman.
I've made it. Well, who are you playing? Woman.
I'm in a big Hollywood film there, but yeah, she's a large woman enjoying a big dinner at this feast, this fiesta. And then she sees him sneaking under her chair to try and reach into Joan's bag for the map. And
he says something like, hey, I dropped my cannoli.
Yes. And she kind of upends the table and kind of woman handles him.
She's hefty.
Yeah. I mean, she literally is the hefty woman.
Yeah. But then Jack and Joan, they kiss. And
they do. They have a big snog in the middle of the dance floor.
And then
at least it means they stop dancing.
They make love.
They just sort of lie on top of each other.
That's the awkward moment. There's this awkward chat they're having when they're nude, lying on top of her.
Yeah, he's covering her boobs.
And she said, Kathleen Turner said later on that she didn't like working on this film because she said that the director was too obsessed with getting a particular kind of shot and not worried about the actors.
I thought she did like working on it. Oh, no, she liked working with Michael Douglas. Okay, but she didn't enjoy the Zemeckis kind of trying to...
No, but I'm guessing she got over it because she's in Who Framed Roger Rabbit as well, isn't she?
Exactly. Another one of his, yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm guessing this is one of those shots because that doesn't look comfortable at all.
It doesn't look comfortable, no. Because imagine how long, you know, filming doesn't take us anywhere near as long as, you know, the length of a scene is like they've done that hundreds of times.
Yeah.
They've probably had to sit there for, I guess their stand-ins would be there lying like that for the lighting.
Yeah.
You know, the blood supply would just be cut off, wouldn't it, after a while?
Neither of them look comfortable.
Not really.
It might as well be upside down.
Hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah. But he basically at this point is ready to, you know...
Cut and run.
Yeah. But she then says, you know what, maybe we should get that jewel.
Now he's shot his load.
I'd be more ready for a nap, surely. I didn't want to be coarse in this.
Sorry.
But you're just making it coarse.
They're lying nudie on top of each other. That's clearly what's happened.
That's, you know, subtext, isn't it? We're not supposed to get into the ins and outs.
They should
of
have
it.
Cut away to fireworks or something.
I didn't want a sort of bukkake session followed.
Bukkake?
Yeah, that's with a ghost.
Okay, cool. Moving on.
But anyway, so she says, let's get that jewel. And then he thinks, hey, you know what? I don't have to double cross her now because she wants to come along with me.
Yes, exactly.
So while he's whispering sweet nothings into her ear, he slowly puts the map back in her bag.
He does. He had slipped it under the mattress where they were lying and he just sneaks it out.
I'm guessing he was going to Xerox it later. I don't understand.
I think he has Xeroxed it.
So
and he was just replacing it without her noticing. I think he was borrowing it, copying it, and then putting it back. Yeah. But now he doesn't need to because they're going to go together. So all good.
So they sneak out in the morning when Solo's men come.
They slide down a lamppost.
They do. It's very sexy.
Quite impressive. No, it's cool because she's like wearing all of her kind of regalia and, you know, a flower tucked behind her ear again, I think. And then she kind of just whizzes down this lamppost. It's most impressive.
And they get in and the nearest car they can find, which happens to be Danny DeVito's.
He's asleep in the back with a coat over
his face.
Because
he's quite little, you wouldn't notice him.
No, but the car's very little. I love that he's like a little package. He's like a Is it a Renault 4 or something?
It looks like a
Renault
Fiat.
4. Or maybe a Fiat. It's more like
a Fiat bubble, not a bubble car, but
it's a cute little
like an Uno.
Car. Yeah, yeah, it's dinky and it sort of suits his stature.
It's kind of like DeVito Uno. I like it. It kind of works.
But yes, anyway, so unbeknownst to them, they're driving off in his car.
Mm.
And another nice moment, Jack says, she says to him, what are you doing? He's like, I'm hot wiring it. She's like, try the key.
Yeah.
Obviously, DeVito's just left. Ralph has left his keys in the ignition.
Because he's asleep in the car.
Exactly.
As you would.
It's a bit stupid, isn't it? But, you know, it's a funny moment. So they drive off. They're being hotly pursued again, as usual, constantly being chased.
Well, they don't get pursued at this point.
Oh, don't they?
No, they just drive off.
That's right.
And they go to the waterfall in the map. The map, kind of, if you fold it together in a special way, Joan finds this.
Yeah.
There's a waterfall. And she's like, look. There's the waterfall.
It makes a kind of heart shape around the waterfall.
That's
which
right.
Indicates where they should find the thing.
So they go through the waterfall, and they find mother's milk. It says on the map.
Yeah, and also I'd just like to point out they're wet again.
Yeah,
they're wet about every 10 to 15 minutes in this film. Just wanted to point that out.
It's a wet country.
Now, in a film degree, I would be like, what? Why the significance of the water? Why are they always wet? Probably.
He likes boats.
Oh yeah,
it's easy as that.
That's it. That's literally it.
He's
wow.
preparing her for a life at sea.
He's preparing. I'm glad you said that and not something else.
No.
Good. So, yes, mother's milk. There's a little white pool.
Pool, yeah. And they dig in it and there's a rabbit statue.
Yeah, like a shit rabbit or a shit, sort of like a cartoon.
She's like, oh, in one of my books, the jewel was hidden in a rabbit.
No, it was hidden in a statue.
In a statue.
So then he gets something and smashes this rather odd-looking, like a modern-looking sort of porcelain statue.
Mm.
And then wrapped up inside is this beautiful... like the size of your fist, kind of green emerald in the shape of a heart.
And they're just about to celebrate this when Danny DeVito arrives.
Oh, so he's been like pretending to be asleep in the back of the car because he's been obviously tracking them. And he pulls a gun on them.
And he drops a little joke here, which becomes a bit of a kind of ooh moment.
What's that?
He says, let's get out of here before Batman comes home. It's like, you went on to play the penguin.
Oh, but obviously he didn't know that then.
No,
it's a nice little little call forward or call back or whatever.
So they go to get in his car and he's like going, ha, 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 I've got the stone. And then he says, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And the whole of Zolo's army are coming.
Yeah. And it's like a huge chase then across the field. They're driving across sort of open fields, which is not great. And like people on horses, people in jeeps, like it's a full-on Charge of the Light Brigade thing. It's quite
and
a big
DeVito
production.
Thinks it's better to run than get in a car and drive.
Yes, obviously. No, well, I guess he thinks he can go and hit sort of like cover or something and get back into the jungle.
Doesn't work, though.
No, he's not, I mean, he's not the brightest of people. He can't run very fast because he's got little legs.
He's got tiny legs, like E.T.
But anyway, so Joan is driving and she sort of says to Jack, get in, and he's kind of hanging off the door and, you know, and then eventually he manages to get in and then she drives them into a river.
Well, they gets the stone back as well.
Yeah, oh, no, he does. He manages to get the, but there's a shopping bag that Danny DeVito's had the stone in. He grabs it back off him. And then, yeah, and they drive into a river. I think she makes some joke about how, well, the last time we did this, you know, there was a bridge hidden or something. But, you know, she knows there's not going to be. So she does literally just drive a car into a rushing torrent of water.
Like a rapids.
It is. It
like
is a
rubber dinghy rapids.
They're in an actual rapids.
Yeah.
And she's trying to steer.
Yeah.
As the car sort of somehow manages to float because I guess the water's so fast moving. But I don't know if the physics of that are true or not. But she's literally steering the wheel. And he's like, what the fuck are you doing? Mm. Like, we're not, that doesn't work. And they're heading towards the edge, obviously.
Yeah. And then they get to a waterfall and they both have to leap out.
They do.
It's quite a nice little shot.
It's a really nice moment. And it's an incredible stunt. And, the stunt people were amazing. Because it kind of looks, it must have been very difficult to jump away from the thing as it hits the edge of the drop. It looked like quite a thing to do.
Probably got big boulders under there as well.
Yeah, bloody terrifying.
I wouldn't want to do that.
Anyway, they do that rather brilliantly.
Mm.
And then they end up on either side of the raging torrent at the bottom.
Yeah.
He's washed up on one rock and she's washed up on the other. He's got the jewel.
Yeah, she's got the map.
She's got the map, but doesn't really need the map. I mean, she sort of does because they don't know that she's got the jewel yet, but...
Yeah. He says that to her, doesn't he? He says, look, you've got the map. They don't know we've got the stone.
Exactly.
I'll meet you at the hotel.
Yes, he knows where to go. He says, follow the setting sun. You're heading west. Like, I'll see you there. But that, obviously that's a big moment of like, do I trust him or not?
She kind of says, how do I know I can trust you?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I'll see you at the hotel.
Yeah. Because again, they keep repeating this motive. Is he trustworthy? Is he trustworthy? And we don't know. And she doesn't know. I quite like that. The audience doesn't know either.
Oh, absolutely.
We don't know if he's going to double cross her. The possibility still has to be there so that when later she gets to the hotel and it's not clear if he's going to come or not, you're like, oh my God, is he an arsehole? Like, could he be an arsehole? But of course he's not.
That's quite a common thing now, but in those days it probably wasn't as common.
No, I don't think so.
You had to be Indiana Jones or nothing. You couldn't be slightly
an ambiguous anti-hero.
But
you
she
should
gets
do a film degree. You've got some of the words.
Thanks very much. I borrow them from you occasionally. If I need help, I'll phone
That's
you.
So patronising. I love it.
You know what patronising means? No. I'll tell you later.
Thanks.
So she goes back to her hotel she was supposed to be in.
Cartagena in Cartagena.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
She rings the kidnappers.
She still has the phone number in her very wet bag. That bag has been doused and dried out by the sun so many times. And all she had was the number she wrote down in her New York apartment on a scrap of paper. And she somehow still has the number.
I bet she still can't find her keys, though, right?
I bet she still doesn't remember to buy tissue.
I bet not.
The big Wally.
Anyway, so she's got 2 hours.
Yeah.
And she's called the reception desk and says, has Jack come in yet?
That's
and the
right.
Guy goes, no, señorita, not for 2 minutes.
Not in the last 2 minutes.
Not in the last 2 minutes.
Underlining the fact that she's been nervously checking every
not
2 minutes.
Not in last 2 minutes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But she's to please don't do the voice. So she doesn't think Jack's coming. You can see in her face.
Yeah.
She's like, I shouldn't have trusted this guy. I'm an idiot. Anyway, I've got important things to do. So the kidnappers tell her to get a water taxi to this secret location where they're going to do the exchange between the map and the sister. Yeah, they're going to
And then they do the exchange. She gets Elaine back.
Yeah.
They grab the map. They're all happy.
Yeah.
And then at the last second, Zollo arrives.
There's a bullet. It's always that they always arrive announced by bullets.
Yes.
So, yeah, clearly something bad's happened. And Jack sticks his head around the corner and he's like, hey, hi. And then he's followed by clearly the police who've caught
him. Says, I missed you at the hotel.
Aww.
Yeah.
It was so sad. So he didn't let her down. He did try to see her, but he did get caught.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
And then Zollo sets fire to the map and says,
burns it.
You don't need this anymore. They've got the stone.
I think it'd still be too wet.
I agree.
Exactly.
Unless it was in a Ziploc bag.
Well, precisely. And it was to start with, but then it was just, you know, it's ridiculous. Yeah. It's been over a waterfall. There's no way it'd still be flammable.
No, absolutely.
But yeah, he knows that they already have the stone. So he knows exactly what's gone on and he just wants what he wants.
So Zollo says, tell me where the stone is. And she says, I don't know. And then he takes her to the crocodiles and says, and cuts her.
Well, we've met the crocodiles a few times just in passing, haven't we? We established that he's nasty and he's got crocodiles as pets.
And Ira keeps referring to them as lovely pair of snappers or something.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And he cuts her hand or her wrist.
Her hand,
and then, and drops blood into the crocodile pit to kind of get them all excited. And obviously Jack hasn't let her down. And then he looks really worried, like genuinely for the first time, like, they're going to hurt her. I think I love her. Like, you can see their faces do all of this acting. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
But you can tell from the way he reacts to that actually there's a bit more in the game here than just his dinky. It's his heart as well.
Well, you say not more than just his dinky, but that's where he's keeping the stone.
Well, I know. That was clever. I like that. It's like it's in a safe place.
It's a nice reveal because they go to punch him in the nuts yes. and then it goes twang.
Yes, exactly. And I think maybe not the man twang. Who punched him in the nuts hurts his hand on the stone because yeah. it's so big, you know, clearly. And it's shoved down his wife front.
And he kicks it down his trouser leg.
He just shakes it down, it lands on the floor.
Yeah, and then, well, he doesn't let it land on the floor because he then drop kicks it.
No, that's right. It lands on the toe of his boot and he hoys it over everyone's heads.
Yeah.
But then the bad baddie.
He catches it.
Catches it in a gloved hand.
And then what happens to
him? But his hand is over the water where what lives in water, well, you should know they're your pets, you stupid man.
Yeah.
And a crocodile just comes up like Captain Hook, you know, in Peter Pan and just like, and bites his hand off. And actually the noise it makes was really convincingly like someone had just bitten the guy's hand off.
And the gush of blood as well.
Oh, it's horrible. Really nasty. So his hand is bitten clean off, the stone and all.
Yeah.
And now the crocodile has the stone. Jack's like trying to keep an eye on the crocodile, trying to keep an eye on his, you know, his woman. But yeah, it kind of sets up this big set piece for the end, which is brilliant, where he's like torn between the two.
Yeah, because he's much like Captain Hook. He's torn between saving his girlfriend
and like
trying
Captain
to stop
Hook.
A crocodile.
Yeah, with a clock in its stomach. No. That's a different. No, we're conflating the two things. it's a hand and a rock.
And a rock.
Yeah.
But he lets the crocodile go.
Yeah.
And he goes up to save Joan, but by the time he gets there, she doesn't need rescuing.
No.
She's sorted it herself.
Yeah, she's had a fight with this big bloody baddie, although he has got one hand. So I guess they're suggesting he's slightly disabled, so she was able to best him in a fight because otherwise he'd just have snapped her like a twig.
True.
But yeah, she has a knife. There's a mirroring of the scene at the start of the film from her novel.
With Grogan.
Where she's like, he says something like, how do you want to die, slowly like a something or quickly like a something else? Mm. And she has a blade behind her back.
Which she stole off him earlier.
And the light flashes on the blade because it's like all the daggers are very clean. It's lovely. Mm. They polished them. And so she's kind of holding this dagger thinking like, when's the time to strike, you know. And he's got a piece of wood in his hand and, you know, her eyes have suddenly light up and she throws it and he stops it with the piece of wood. And it's like, oh, shit, now what's she going to do? But somehow she still manages to kill him.
Well, she sets him on fire.
She shoves him in a puddle of flames and then he staggers accidentally into a pit of crocodiles.
Yeah, and gets eaten.
Well, and barbecued simultaneously.
Yeah, must have been quite nice for them.
Nice for the crocodiles. I bet it smelt good.
And then Danny DeVito tries to run away, and this is one of my favourite moments.
Yes.
His cousin Ira gets on the boat and leaves him there.
Yeah.
And then he says, I'll come back for you.
When?
Soon. How soon? Very soon. And they just leave him there.
They couldn't give less of a shit about him. There's no love there.
So, yeah, Joan has rescued Elaine. Everything's great.
She's rescued herself.
And then we cut back to her agent reading her newest novelle.
Yeah.
Crying her eyes out.
There's a nice fade where she's... the crucial thing is Jack says goodbye to her.
Oh, yeah.
She's like, you're leaving me? Kind of, he checks that the girls are okay. And he's like, right... he's still got a crocodile to catch up with. Like, how the hell he plans to do
well,
that?
Well, he also, the police are coming and he says, oh, there's a history of me in the police.
He can't stick around. And also he really wants that crocodile because if there's any chance he can still buy his boat, then he's going to go for it.
Tony?
Yeah. Okay. All right, here's what we got to do. Get to the American consulate. Just tell him everything.
Well, where are you going?
They might even believe you, but just one thing. Don't mention my name. Cartagena cops and I go way back. Elaine, it's been a pleasure.
You're leaving? You're leaving me?
You're going to be all right, Joan Wilder. Yeah.
And then he belly flops. It's supposed to be like a really beautiful dive.
He's supposed to swan, like dive off the wall into the sea and swim away. But yeah, he just kind of drops.
It didn't look very good.
Stone. Yeah. And so she's kind of in profile, hair sort of flailing behind her, looking after where he's just jumped. And then it crossfades to her in New York, suddenly looking like Kathleen fucking Turner. She's got like the hair and the makeup and the pussy bow blouse. And she suddenly looks like the 80s Kathleen Turner we all know and love. Not the lovely girl, the kind of the sophisticated woman. Mm. I preferred her in the nightshirt and socks, but you know,
Maybe she can do that in the evenings.
Perhaps, yes, when no one's looking. But she looks very like she's kind of come into her own and she's this suddenly she's this like self-actualized woman.
Well, she says to her that you're a hopeless romantic and she says, no, I'm a Hopeful.
And she has a little half smile like, maybe. But, you know, she clearly hasn't seen Jack since the day in Colombia. And now she's just trying to get on with her life. And
well, she's written a book about it.
She's written the story of their adventures as a romantic novel. Yeah,
and
exactly.
Her agent cries.
And she cries. And it's like the best one she's ever written. It's going to take her into the big league, you know, all that. So clearly it's important to establish that she has become the person she needs to be. Not with a man's help. She just has found out who she really is. She's proved her mettle on this incredible adventure and is now writing amazing books.
So she then leaves her agent, picks up some brown paper shopping.
Yes,
like they do
it's
in America.
The American groceries in an American bag that you have to hug to your chest. There's no handles.
Yeah, that's.
I mean, I approve of the whole no plastic thing. Like, great. Like, really ahead of its time.
Yeah.
But there's no way of holding them apart from cuddling your shopping.
No.
But, you know, that's like a cute, like, American thing, isn't it? Like, I'm cuddling my shopping. I live in New York and I cuddle shopping.
Yeah, but what's in front of her building, Julia? What the fuck?
It's a massive fucking yacht on a trailer in the middle of the street, if you please.
What the heck?
And she see, and the minute she sees it, she's like, I know who this is.
It's Tom Howard.
Yay!
Come away with me.
Oh, where's there? Yeah, it's he's finally, obviously, he's caught up with the crocodile.
Yeah, because he's
Jesse is the character in her novels. Jack is wearing crocodile boots, much like Jimmy Nail.
Like Jimmy Nail.
Yeah, doesn't sing the song, thank God. Mm. And she's got some flowers sticking out of her grocery bag and she inexplicably dumps her grocery. He lowers a stepladder. No, not a stepladder, a rope ladder.
Rope ladder, yeah.
She gets the flowers. I almost expected her to like put them in her teeth.
Mm.
But she holds them in one hand, slightly awkwardly climbs up the rope ladder and then snogs him. Titles.
And then we get this Saxon...
The saxy piano-y thing. It sort of didn't quite work. Some of the music in this wasn't quite right, I don't
think. You needed a nice ballad at the end there, I
would
have
thought. Well, yeah, maybe. Something by Marty Webb or...
Or even, you know, When the Going Gets Tough, the Tough Gets Going would have been...
I mean, that would have been terrific.
Perfect.
Yeah, but it sets up... They must have known they were going to do the next film, did they?
I don't know.
I bet it was like a two-picture deal. I'm imagining that's how it's...
I reckon not, but as soon as the box office went mental...
Well, actually, yes, it did super well. I guess if Zemeckis' last film had bombed, then maybe they were going to wait and see.
Zemeckis didn't do the sequel.
Oh, did he not?
No.
Oh. I didn't realise.
Nothing to do with it.
Who did the second one?
I don't know.
Look it up. Phone in and say.
It's just for fun.
Do you want to look it up now?
I'll look it up now.
I can fill if you like while you're on the internet.
You fill.
But yeah, no, the final scene is really lovely because it's like a huge, it's a huge street in, I think it's New York, isn't it?
Yeah.
And there's hardly any other traffic there, just this massive trailer with this really quite substantially huge, I mean, you could live on it, definitely, yacht. And the two of them are on deck, driving away from the camera, strange music playing, and they're just basically on deck, snogging each other's faces off. It's delightful. It's like wish fulfillment, but it's kind of, it's on her terms because she's who she wants to be and doesn't need him to save her, but she's very pleased to see he's back because the sex must have been good. Yeah, no, it's nice. It's just a very satisfactory ending.
I think she was a big fan of the awkward on top chats.
She must have loved that, yeah, yeah. Did not look comfortable.
No. The sequel is directed by Lewis Teague.
Never heard of him. Sorry, Lewis.
He also directed the film Cujo.
Did he?
And the Stephen King film Cat's Eye. Navy Seals, which is a terrible film.
Is it bad? Okay. so far in your... He's not ticking many boxes in your book, is he?
No.
No.
But we've come to the point.
The end?
Where I'm going to ask you some questions.
Oh, yes, I know. Okay, good.
For your little red book.
I've got a little red book. It's nice, isn't it?
You have. It's very small.
It's lovely.
You should get a bigger one.
You don't want an unwieldy book when you're doing a podcast, John.
I like having an A5.
What's that, A6? Is that an A6?
That's an A6.
Yeah, it's petite and, I like it. It fits in the palm of your hand. Just do that for the page that you can hear. It's my notebook. There we go.
Everyone knows what a notebook is.
Okay, fine. Sorry.
You're not some sort of sage. You're more like an onion.
Thank you.
First question. Who is best, Arnie or Sly?
I think Arnie.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though he's foreign, he...
So sly.
I
know what you mean.
He's easier to understand.
Yes.
Like, I mean, I speak as someone who's had Bell's palsy. I did have that thing where you wake up one day and your face doesn't work. Terrifying, isn't it? You're having a stroke. It's absolutely mind-blowing.
I had it when
terrifying.
I was 13.
Did you? Mm. I had it when I was in my 20s. It was really frightening. Yeah. But, I understand that, you know, his face maybe works differently, but I just think Arnie's got more charisma.
Yep, I agree.
And he's more tallerer, and he seems like a stand-up guy. Don't know, just prefer him.
No, I agree.
Can I just say he's better? I don't know why.
In your opinion, what's the best action movie of all time?
Well, if I can, I mean, I'm a fan of olden times films, very much so. So if it counts as one, I would like to say The 39 Steps.
I'd say that counts as one.
Yeah, no, yeah. I think it's brilliant. Just that whole hanging off the railway bridge in Scotland. Oh, just it's absolutely brilliant. It never lets up in its kind of the pace and the...
Not the Robert Powell remake then?
Well, I mean, I didn't think that was bad, but no, the original...
David Warner.
Is, yes, exactly. Good cast. But no, the is it Robert Donat one? I think he's just exemplary.
Yeah.
Very, very thrilling. And I love how London and Scotland looks in it, and just everything about it is just brilliant.
Excellent. Okay, so terrorists have taken over a skyscraper. You can take three celebrities with you to stop them. Who are you taking up the Shard and why?
Well, so... This might sound a bit left field, but this occurred to me because this is very much sort of rooted in the 80s action film. This film was obviously made in the 80s. Mm. 80s and 90s. So it just this popped into my head and suddenly it made all the sense. So the team from Changing Rooms. So they're really good at like ruining the insides of buildings.
Yeah.
So I figured like you get Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen.
Yeah.
Just because he makes, you know, horrible messes in inside buildings. Then you also get Linda Barker, who smashed all those teapots.
Teapots, yeah.
And then Handy Andy, who I think may have been responsible for the shelving. Well, he did, yeah, you see. So you want at least one voice of reason.
Plus, you can tell he is a voice of reason, because in the immediate aftermath, he literally turns around to them and goes, it's your fault.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Brilliant. Passing the buck. But I like the idea that he'd have tools and you'd probably be able to get you into lift shafts and all that kind of stuff. But, to for people who can just absolutely... cock up the interior of any building. I think they could make it so that the terrorists would even if they just made like really ugly rooms, the terrorists would be so distracted by the awfulness of them. You could probably have time to call the police or just cut them while they weren't looking.
Brilliant.
So the team from Changing Rooms, I'm saying the three of those, any three really.
Perfect. Okay. If you could go back in time and stop someone being born, who is it? Much like Desert Island Discs, I'm giving you Hitler.
Okay, so I've got Hitler. I can't think of anyone who's not obvious. Donald Trump, obviously, or Esther Ranson. But then Childline wouldn't happen, so I don't know.
What's wrong with Esther Ranson?
I just think she's awful.
So Donald Trump or Esther Ranson?
Yeah.
That's saying that they're comparable.
Okay, well, Donald Trump then.
Okay, good. I was going to say, I'm not like the president of the Esther Ranson fan club, but...
Anymore. They kicked you out, yeah.
Yeah, it's because I kept doing that tooth thing. we've done that one. A hypothetical fist fight takes place between Rocky Balboa and John Matrix, which is Arnold Schwarzenegger and Commando.
Yeah.
Who wins?
Why do you want them to keep fighting all the time? Why can't they just get along? Okay, well, if they had to have a fist fight, obviously Rocky's a boxer.
Mm.
You're going to get everyone saying the same thing, aren't you? But I said, Rocky's a boxer. If you take away the, Arnie's guns, I mean, he's still huge and, you know, a bodybuilder. But I don't know. I think for ducking and diving and skills... I'm guessing Rocky would probably win.
Yeah, okay.
Although I'm sure he's shorter, isn't he?
Much shorter,
But, you know, I don't know. If it's a boxing match, I'm going with Rocky.
Yeah, well, Rocky beat Ivan Drago, who's much taller than him.
And he's much... Well, then, fine, Rocky, easy.
Okay, good.
It's a no-brainer.
And if you had to make your own 80s action movie, what would it be about and who would be the lead?
Well, obviously yachts. It has to be yacht-based.
Yeah.
If it's an 80s action film, then, I mean, immediately I'd say, like, make Howard's Way the movie. But, you know, if we can't do that... Then if it's something based on a boat, then Steven Seagal has to be in it, obviously, as a kind of fat chef with a much thinner body double. By the time there's one, I think it's called Belly. I should have done a Steven Seagal, but there's one called Belly of the Beast. Have you seen that one?
I've seen the poster for it.
And his and it might be one where he's a chef on a boat, but I can't remember. He's always a chef on a boat. But by this time, he's become so rotund.
Uh-huh.
But he refuses stunt doubles who are... equal to him in like girth, so his stunt double's like these really skinny kind of muscly dudes and he's just this enormous flump, and I really like the cut between the two, so I want him to be in something on a boat. Just that. So, I mean, I'm not fussy, just him on a boat in whatever context, you know.
But what's it going to be called? Stuff and fat chef
on a boat.
Perfect. Well, Julia Ray,
fat chef on a boat, fuck stuff up.
Chef on a boat, fuck stuff up.
Fuck shit up.
You might have a problem with the poster.
All right, just Fat Chef on a Boat then.
Fat Chef on a Boat's good.
Yeah.
Right, well, Julia, thank you so much for romancing the stone.
It was good, wasn't it?
It was good.
Just like, it's a lovely film.
We'd all like to write our own reviews, Julia, but yeah, it was good.
It was good, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That's my critical opinion.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. It's been so much fun.
Yeah, bye.
See ya. We'll be right back.
greatbigowl.com.